You're listening to Vatican Radio. Pope Francis on Wednesday presides at Vespers in the Basilica of St. Paul outside the walls for the closing of the annual Week of Prayer for Christian Unity. On that occasion, the Sistine Chapel Choir will be joined by the men and boys of the Westminster Abbey Choir, renowned as one of the finest choral music groups of its kind. Ahead of this unprecedented event, the two choirs are also performing a concert on Tuesday evening in the Basilica of St. John Lateran. Their collaboration grows out of recent years of deepening Anglican-Catholic relations, in particular following Pope Benedict XVI's visit to London in September 2010. To find out more about this musical collaboration and about the history of the Westminster Abbey Choir, I spoke to the Dean of the Abbey, the Very Reverend Dr. John Hall, and to the only full-time English singer with the Sistine Chapel Choir, Mark Spiropoulos. The Sistina, as it's called, claims to be the oldest choir in the world, dating right back to the 6th century. Westminster Abbey was founded by the Benedictine monks in the 10th century, wasn't it?
That's correct, yes, 960.
Does the choir date from that same period then?
No, the choir really is a 14th century invention. What had happened was that in the 13th century, the cult of Our Lady was developing so strongly, and they had a daily mass of Our Lady in the nave, but they decided early in the 13th century to build a chapel in honour of Our Lady to the east of the abbey. And in the 14th century, they developed a choir of men and boys that would sing the daily offices and no doubt at the daily mass in the Lady Chapel. So the monks were singing in the main abbey church, and this choir of men and boys who were lay men started singing in the Lady Chapel. And after the Reformation, when the monks went in 1540 and again in 1560, 1559, so that's a sort of continuous thing since the 14th century.
And so it's the tradition has been carried on right the way through to the modern choir as it is today, as you say, still made up of adults and boys at the choir school.
So we have 12 lay vicars who are the men. The lay vicar term is an interesting one because obviously they're lay, but they're also deputies. Vicar means a deputy, so they're, as it were, deputies for the monks, as it were. So you see that ancient history feeding through into the modern terminology. And the boys are educated in the Abbey Choir School, which just educates the boys in the choir.
Let's look specifically at this collaboration between the Sistine Chapel Choir and the Westminster Abbey Choir. It began, if I'm not mistaken, following Pope Benedict's visit to the UK in 2010.
So the Pope came on September the 17th, 2010, and I think it was an extraordinary experience receiving him, and he, I understand from people, rather enjoyed the liturgy. Then the following year, I came to Monte Cassino and there were further conversations about what might happen. So on the Solemnity of Saints Peter and Paul, 29th of June, 2012, the Abbey Choir was the first choir ever to sing with the Sistine Chapel Choir. As I understand it, other choirs had previously sung beside the Sistine Chapel Choir, but they hadn't sung with. And there was also our own repertoire during that service. So it was a most extraordinary experience.
How significant an ecumenical event was this, do you think, Mark, for the Sistine Chapel singers?
I think it was hugely important. Again, when we sang in 2012, I wasn't there at that time, but when we sang in 2015, when we then came to the Abbey, I think it was hugely important for the Sistine Choir as an ecumenical moment where we came and sang choral evensong, which I think maybe the first time that the Sistine has ever sung choral evensong, at least with a full choir, and to sing what you might call standard Anglican repertoire at that time as well. We sang Parry, My Soul, There Is a Country, and we sang the Psalms of Choral Evensong to Gregorian chant. So I think it was not just an ecumenical moment, but also a hugely important cultural moment for the choir also.
The choir has, at the moment, been developing relations with not just the Church of England, not just the Anglican choral tradition, but also with many other different traditions, hasn't it?
That's become right.
Something of a feature of the choir at the moment.
Yes, we've sung a lot now with the Lutheran choirs, recently with the Patriarch Choir in December from Moscow. I think this is a very important and a very welcome part of our work. I think when we sing together, I think it's the most beautiful expression of the Christian faith. And when we sing with a choir like Westminster Abbey, I mean, this is a choir which is really sets the standard of choral music around the world. You can see that Christians, Anglicans, Catholics are really cut from the same cloth.
When in 2012 we sang a concert in the Sistine Chapel on the eve of the Papal Mass on the 29th, Cardinal Bertone, who was the Secretary of State at the time, and I spoke both spoke after the experience. And I felt that this was a really important moment in ecumenical relations, that somehow we've moved from the point of, as it were, sitting opposite each other, arguing or dialoguing or just saying, this is what I believe, this is what you believe, this is what we, let's all see if we can believe in common, to walking together. And singing together, of course, is a wonderful way of working together. And that produces a whole range of new reactions and a new situation, in fact. It creates a wonderful context in which the dialogue that we have to have together, which is a very important part, you know, doctrinal understanding and so on, is set in a context of friendship, of collaboration, and above all, and this is so important, of worshipping together.
As you say, music does in this extraordinary way transcend barriers that words perhaps can't. Words divide us, but music can somehow unite us in this very deep spiritual way. How do you share this extraordinary experience, this development, with a wider audience, perhaps with a non-church-going audience?
Well, I think, I mean, the eyes of the world are on the Vatican. And there is an extent to which the eyes of the world are on Westminster Abbey as well. It is a sort of place that's probably known pretty well around the world because of coronations and royal weddings and the people who are buried there and the people who are memorialised there. We have, for example, heads of state coming to the Abbey from every country in the world. When a head of state comes to visit the Queen on a state visit, then they come to the Abbey. They lay a wreath at the grave of the unknown warrior. We pray for world peace together. And I've stood there at the grave of the unknown warrior in the nave of Westminster Abbey with heads of state from all around the world. It's been a most extraordinary experience. When President Obama came, I then give them a private tour of the Abbey. So I get 20 minutes or half an hour with the head of state. So I had a tour with President Obama. And at one point on the tour, I spoke to him about the popularity of the Abbey with Americans. And he said, well, you know, our history is not so long. But here you've got the history of not only England and the United Kingdom and the Commonwealth, but of the whole English-speaking world. And I think that does make the Abbey a place that people look to. So what we're doing is something which has a significance that ripples out and can have an effect way, way, way beyond the particular moment that we're talking about, precious moment though that is.
You do a lot of recording, don't you, Mark? The Sistine Chapel has also begun a fairly new venture with recording a CD, and that is continuing. This is another way, isn't it, of reaching out? And can we perhaps think of a recording with ecumenical choirs?
Well, of course, we have just released their new CD. Came out perhaps last week. I think music has a hugely important role to play, because people, as you say, who may know nothing about the faith or very little about what goes on, they can understand and sense the significance of what's being said because they can hear that expressed through the music. Even if they don't understand what the words mean, they can understand how important they are. And the beauty and significance of it, I think, comes through the music.
You might say there's been an astonishing democratization of the music of the church in the last 50 years. If you look back to the era before really good recordings and before, you know, HD and really good broadcasts, people would only have access to the church's music if they went to the fairly rare places where it was sung really brilliantly. Nowadays, of course, it's sung in concert halls all over the world, and I've often reflected on what the religious experience is of people who are largely secular, who have no real understanding of religion, but are hearing, you know, a 16th century mass or 17th century mass being sung, or the Verdi Requiem or something in a concert. What is the religious impact of that? And I think there's a very curious way in which, with numbers not being quite what they were in church, there's nevertheless the spreading of the church's worship has gone outside, and people are experiencing it in their homes, when they listen to the radio, but when they go to concerts in so many different places.
Here in Rome, you're going to be doing a concert as well as the Vespers for the closing of the Week of Prayer for Christian Unity. Can you give us a little bit of insight what might be on the programme, or how the decision is made as to what goes on the programme?
Well, I think the decision is made in collaboration between Maestro Massimo Palombello and James O'Donnell, who is our organist and master of the choristers at Westminster Abbey. And I don't actually know exactly what's going to be sung. What will happen, I know, is that the Sistine Chapel Choir will sing something on their own, the Westminster Abbey Choir will sing something on their own, and there will be something which they sing together. Mm. When, in 2012, the Mass was the Palestrina Missa Papa Marcelli, and everyone sang that together, in the Basilica on the morning of the 29th, the Abbey Choir sang William Byrd's Ave Verum Corpus. And that, for Westminster Abbey Choir to sing in St. Peter's Basilica, a piece of music written by a Catholic recusant in the 16th century, tolerated by Queen Elizabeth, writing some English music, but also writing for the small number of Catholics remaining in England in those days. Music that would have been sung in secret, on the whole, in little gatherings, under threat. Ave Verum Corpus, such a central piece of music for the Catholic tradition. We sing it, of course, at the Abbey nowadays. For the Abbey Choir to be singing it in St. Peter's Basilica, someone described that to me as being a sort of life-changing moment.
My thanks to the Very Reverend Dr. John Hall, Dean of Westminster Abbey, and to Mark Spiropoulos of the Sistine Chapel Choir.